You know, we have, if we've been in the church for a long, long time, and I've been in the church about 54 years, and that doesn't make me great. That doesn't make me knowledgeable. That doesn't make me useful. But time spent is not necessarily time used wisely. You'd think that wisdom goes with age, and sometimes it does. But there are things that you have to consider again and again and again in order to make a successful life. Well, in the church, we have basic beliefs, basic doctrines, basic knowledge, basic understanding, things that sometimes seem so axiomatic, so, you know, everybody should know this and believe this. And yet, there are sometimes topics that we need to rehearse and revise in our lives. And those of us who've been in the church for a long time take some of these things for granted. And our basic doctrines, or our fundamentals of belief. And we have bought in, as it were, to those fundamental beliefs. This is what we believe. This is what makes us what it is that we are. This is what defines us. And so some time ago, I determined that slowly as we go, I was going to go through again and rehearse, not that I'm presenting something new, but rehearse some of those fundamentals of belief that we all know. The thing is, sometimes our young people aren't as well grounded in those fundamentals of belief as we are. Now, if they were born and raised in the church and parents are diligently teaching them, they know about these things too, but they're young in their lives. And there comes a place and a point where they have to consider for themselves where they believe these things that we call fundamental. And so today I want to talk about a subject that is probably the most fundamental of all of the fundamental beliefs that we have. And that fundamental belief is that we believe that God exists. That's one thing to say, I believe God exists, because I'll bet you if you go on the street in Lexington, Kentucky, or any other town or city, you're going to find a lot of people who will say, well, yeah, I believe God exists. But that they never conduct their lives in such a way that proves that they really think that or believe that. They think that we have to make our own way. We don't need, we don't have someone that we want to tell us that they are there and that we should behave in a certain way. And so again, I'd like to take you back to a moment of time in my life. Now, if you will, I come from the very, very rural areas in the foothills of Appalachia, for all of the good and the bad that that brings to the table. And I remember going to visit my grandparents very frequently. I remember one occasion. I was there and my grandfather was there. We were on the front porch. And I don't know how many of my cousins and I were there. There were several of us. I remember that. And my grandfather took us out onto the roadway in front of the house and laid down face up in the center of the highway. The center of the road. Now that sounds like it might be a pretty dangerous thing, right? Except it wasn't that kind of road. I mean, it was that kind of road. It was blacktop. It was a used road. It was used every day. But this was at night. It was a clear night. It was an extremely clear night. And there we are, perpendicular to the white line in the center of the road, laying with our grandfather, staring up at the sky. And it wasn't all that dangerous because it was in a stretch of road that stretched a mile in both directions. Had a car been coming, there were very few cars that came down that road at night. Had a car been coming, we would have known it far, far in advance. Then our grandfather would have gotten us up and we would have gotten out of the road. But we had an opportunity there that was one of those capstone memories of my youth. Because while laying in that road, staring up into a perfectly clear sky, it was way out in the country. There was no glow from any city. There was no glow from any house. There was no glow from any set of headlights. And there we lay in absolute awe of the sight that we were looking at. Pitch black. No light pollution, no passing cars, and no sound. Just silence and the beauty of the night. And there, stretching from horizon to horizon, was a sky that was so packed with stars that it almost felt like it was pressing down on us. And the Milky Way there was not dim. It was bright, and we could see a haze across the heavens. It wasn't faint or smudged, it was actually a river of light. And that type of thing makes you feel so small, and yet there you are, you're laying there, and sometimes your mind turns to, how'd that get there? How did we get here? Who made it? How did it get made? Just looking at the stars, and I've had that experience a few other times in my life. I remember going up the Grand Tetons, camping, backpacking in the Grand Tetons, and seeing that kind of experience again. And it just gives you an absolute sense of awe. Now, maybe you've had moments like that too, looking at the stars, standing on a mountaintop, watching a sunset, watching something beautiful, seeing the clouds drift across the sky and thinking there was a great artist that created a panorama, a picture that was in constant motion and movement that was beautiful beyond what you could imagine. And so you have this question that comes to you. Is there God? Now, if there is no God, what then? We all know that we're going to die, right? So is all of this just a flash in the pan? That we go from blackness to blackness, from nothingness to nothingness? Does it all, the moment that we expired that last time, we had two in our church that died this week. Is there nothing more of them? So one of the most important questions that you will ever ask yourself, and you need to have the answer, does God exist? And it is, by the way, a question behind all of the study of the sciences, of philosophy, and of religion, because all of those things came to be because of this one question. The great scientists of the past, Newton, even going back to the philosophers like Plato, they're wondering how it was that all of this came to be. And the pagans concocted grand tales about beings, but there was one being. And that is the greatest tale of all. Today, I want to do three things: to show you reasons to believe that God does exist. I want to explain why some people choose to deny it, even when the evidence is right in front of them. And I want to cover and share signs in creation, in history, and in my own life that point to why I know God exists and made everything for a purpose. Because I can't tell you to believe that God exists. There are reasons for you to believe, but that has to come from your mind and your faith. And I can share with you some of the things that occurred in my life. When you look at the universe, the balance of gravity, the precision of the planetary orbits, the fine-tuned constants of physics, it's like looking into a massive and perfectly running machine. That sky I was looking at is absolutely bound by the laws of physics. Now, physics is a study of matter, energy, and their interactions. In other words, how stuff goes together and works, to put it simply. There are certain laws, there are certain things that are going on, and every time there is a demonstration of awe-inspiringness, there's also someone who says, didn't happen, ain't happening, ain't no God. There was a man by the name of Richard Dawkins, one of the most famous atheists of all times. I think maybe Professor Dawkins is still alive, but he wrote a book called The Blind Watchmaker. And he insists that even in his denial of God, he says that the university does have an appearance of having been designed on purpose. He says, it looks like it was designed, but wasn't. It looks like it was put together and engineered, but it wasn't. Why wasn't it? Because there's no God. The denial of God is the basic underpinning of his belief. Now, he stops short of saying it is designed. because that would destroy his argument. But he does admit that, guess what? It looks that way. It looks like it was designed. Let's turn to Psalms. Very famous Psalm, Psalm 19. Of course, all Psalms are famous, I guess. Psalm 19. We listened to a sermon on faith last night, and the minister was having a very difficult time getting to his scriptures, sort of like I am right now. Psalm 19 and, well, not Job. Psalm 19. There we go. And this is a psalm about the perfect revelation of God. And it was written by King David to the chief musician at the court of the kingdom. And it says, verse one, the heavens declare the glory of God. It certainly did to me that night, staring up at the sky, at the night sky with my grandfather. And the firmament, that bowl of heaven that stretches over you, shows his handiworks. Day unto day, it screams at you, it utters speech, and night unto night, it reveals knowledge. And the more they learn about the cosmos, as Hubble puts up his satellite and stares billions of years into the past, because that's what you're actually looking at. You're looking at light that started shining toward you long, long, long ago. And it's taken that long till now to get here. And they know how to measure how long ago it is by a process called redshift in types and wavelengths of light. And they can tell that it was billions of years ago, 30 billion, or 10 billion years ago, that certain star started its shine toward us. Verse three, there is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world. It speaks to us for us to see the awesomeness of God. God's creation, that sky, that nighttime sky, is like a billboard in the night that screams, here I am. I'm here. And where have you ever seen where something that is nothing reveals itself? The lack of chaos. Without someone to organize and order. When you see organization and order, you see the mind of God. It's like your mother having you to clean your room. She's doing it through your hands. All right, go clean your room. Who's cleaning the room? Well, you're involved, but she's getting it done by having you do it. She's doing it through your hands, and it's for order's sake. God is a practitioner of order, and for your benefit to get a clean room and to get discipline in the process. And so God reveals himself, and he reveals the order that he has for us to see so that we will see that order and marvel about it. Let's turn to Romans, the first chapter, verse 28. Romans 1, verse 28. Because we've shifted gear, why do people deny that there is a God when there is this great display of order and exactness in front of us every night? Or if you get a microscope out and look down into the depths of the cell, you can see the order and exactness. Now, I took a class once in electron microscopy when I was studying for my degree in biology. Electron microscopy, electron microscopes. And if I didn't get anything else out of it, I got this. If you look at something created by man, you take a finely honed piece of steel and you polish it and you polish it and you polish it until it is as slick as a mirror. And you can see your face in it. You put it under an electron microscope and it begins to look coarser and coarser and coarser the closer you get to the surface. You take a cutting out of a leaf, you put that under an electron microscope, something that God created himself. And you look closer and closer, and it gets more intricate and better focus, and you can see the detail better and better the closer you get to it. That's God's world. That's God's world. And we here, I've noticed that we human beings are at the nexus of two universes. One that expands outward into the cosmos, and one that goes into the inner workings of the cell and the atom, and they are both universal in their characteristics. And we, mankind, is right here in the middle to observe the awe that God has there. And yet, there are those people who say, God doesn't exist. And God, through Paul here, says in verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a base or a damaged mind to do those things that are not fitting. And so, for most of the world, God has said, if you deny my existence, the existence, then you're not going to have the capability of thinking properly. Some people, even brilliant scientists, have decided ahead of time. There can't be a God, and it's not because they've ever proven it. It's because they've chosen not to consider the possibility. There was a famous immunologist, Dr. Scott Todd, who once wrote, and he, by the way, does not believe that there is no God. Even if all the data, and he wrote this, even if all the data points to an intelligent designer, with all that, all of those data points, all that information, such a hypothesis, there being the existence of God, is excluded from science because it's not naturalistic. It's not physical. And so the belief among those who deny God is that if you can't prove it scientifically, you can't claim that it exists. Well, guess what? God is a spirit. And basically, they're saying we've already decided that God can't be a part of the answer. But here's the truth. God is spiritual. Look at John 4, 24. We won't turn there, but it basically says God is spirit. And in order to see spiritual things, you have to look, because they're, the old saying, colorless, tasteless, and odorless. Spirit does not register in the physical eye except through experience, through the effects of the spirit, and through relationships that are caused by the spirit. Both belief in God and non-belief in God require faith. God doesn't exist. I'm taking that on faith because I can't prove it. And they're saying, you're being faithful in believing that God exists, and they're right. And we can't prove it physically by science, by physics, but we can't prove it, and they can't. And so believing in God requires faith, but so does believing that the universe came from nothing without it requires faith. Both positions are based on something you can't see directly. Sometimes people reject God not because physical evidence isn't there, but because they don't want that believing in God, they don't want to believe what that would mean to them. What they would have to give up that they want to keep. Self-determination, self-direction, my way. But we say that there is evidence. And what is that evidence? I want to go through some evidence, not physical proof per se, but evidence. What are those things that are observable pieces of evidence in the universe? I want to present seven proofs, evidence that points towards a creator. We talked about one of them already. Proof number one is design requires a designer. If there is order, then it has to be an orderer. It has to be one who sets things in order. I know some time ago, and I believe it was on a trip to the feast, the Whitlarks came back from their feast in Montana, I think it was, and they went past Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore, and I remember that Mr. Whitlark was talking to his kiddos, and he pointed to Mount Rushmore. If I get this wrong, Mike, you can straighten me out, but he's asking them, what do you think about these natural rock formations there? The faces of the president on the side of the hill just screamed out that somebody went up there with a chisel and chipped out the rock that didn't look like the faces of the president. And yet, that is descriptive of the entirety of the universe and the creation of God. Now, is Professor Dawkins going to say, that's a natural rock formation, and expect anybody to believe? Can't. Because some things are just patently obvious. What about the repeated patterns in nature? DNA coding. How about the Fibonacci sequence? Anybody ever heard of the Fibonacci sequence? Yeah, we've got our kiddos in the back. Look out, all you adults. The kids in the back know about the Fibonacci sequence. And it's amazing. Fibonacci sequence.
What do
It's a
they know?
series
Simple.
of numbers where each number is the sum of the two preceding numbers. Okay. 0 plus 1 is 1. 1 plus 1 is 2. 1 plus 2 is 3. 2 plus 3 is 5. These are Fibonacci, well, I can't remember the term now. Fibonacci sequence numbers. Yeah, there we go. There we go. And yet, the makeup and structure of much of the world, flowers, what the arrangement of leaves on a stem, the spirals of a sunflower are all based on Fibonacci numbers. The branchings of tree limbs on a tree, the patterns in a pine cone or a seashell. You've heard of the chambered nautilus? The chambered nautilus is a seashell or a sea creature. And the arrangements of the cell is based on Fibonacci numbers. Well, oh man, aren't you gratefully happy that chaos produced that? And yet, you know instinctively and intrinsically that that did not happen. Proof number two. Proof number two. The law of biogenesis. When's the last time that you ever saw one rock marrying another rock and producing little rocks? Life comes from life. Life comes from life, and there is no example anywhere of its being different from that. Now, people have gotten into their laboratories and they put chemicals in a jar in a test container. They've heated it up, they've twisted it and turned it and shaken it. And they've gotten certain compounds made up that are compounds. They may be looking like an enzyme or a protein, but are not self-sustaining. Life comes from life, and almost everything that you can see and everything that you go hunting for demonstrates that absolutely. Is nothing something? Is nothing alive? And these are questions that begin to come to the minds of an 8-year-old laying in the center of the road, looking up at something awesome. And it unlocks other possibilities that present themselves and other things that need to be considered. And I will tell you that I once believed in the theory of evolution. I did. When I was in high school, I believed it. You know why I believed it? That's the only thing I heard. My teachers in biology class, in chemistry class, in physics class, that this is the way it is. This is the way it is. These were trusted people. These were the people there to demonstrate reality to my mind until I came to that point where I began to question their misplaced reality. And I could see where some of the things they were talking about could not be so. I remember when I was first coming into the church. This is the proof number three, that really captured my mind and made me really start to think about if God was real or not real. And that was when I learned that the universe had a beginning. The universe started, and I'm saying, okay, what started? How did it start? There was, has been, and I believe largely, the Big Bang Theory. It's how it spells out that becomes an issue, but the Big Bang Theory basically says that it started from an infinitely dense singularity, a infinitely dense dot or particle or whatever you want to call it. And all of a sudden, there was this huge expansion of energy. There are a lot of things come out of it. A lot of things come out of it. It's not just an explosion, but a controlled explosion. 10 to the minus 36 seconds. Now, that's 10 with 36 zeros backwards before you put the decimal point. That is a very, 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 very tiny piece of a second. And yet, if the expansion of that explosion occurred at a different rate, matter would not have been created, according to the theoretical physicists and scientists. It had to occur right there. It had to expand right then. At an exact rate, or all of that energy would have been blown out and never formed matter. It's called quark, Quark, confinement. And so, had there not been that energy, and had there not been that energy releasing in exactly the right time, at the right speed, universe would never have come to be. And so I learned that the universe had a beginning. It had a beginning there, and it is expanding as we speak. It's still expanding. It's like an explosion, right? When you have an explosion, the energy is released, stuff flies out everywhere. And after the explosion, everything slows down, stops, right? The universe is not only still expanding, but the expansion is speeding up. It's not slowing down, it's speeding up. You can't have that in an explosion unless you have an added input of energy into that explosion system. If it comes to a stop, Then gravity, another piece of the universe, pulls it all back together. So, I mean, these two pieces of paper have a gravity. We have a gravity with the Earth that we're standing on. It's called weight. Some of us have more gravity than others. And some of us have a harder time with gravity than we have than others. I've been having a lot of trouble with my gravity, but the universe is not like that. It's expanding. It had a starting point. It's speeding up to go to where? I don't know. God will tell us because God exists and he does things in an orderly fashion. And that's one of the proofs that I thought that he existed. Now, the universe is running down. Point number four. I've already talked about that a little with the explosion. Energy is dissipating. It's like a clock winding down. Something had to start it, and something has to maintain it. I got ahead of myself when I said that it had a beginning and it's now running down, but expanding nevertheless. Proof number five, repeated design features point to one designer. You're putting together a set of plans for your house. You use the same window in various places of your house. You don't use different windows on the west wall and on the north wall and the skylight. A lot of animals had tails. And evolution says that's because they all came from the same thing and they just gradually drifted away. But it's just as easy to argue that it had a common designer who said, "Ooh, I like that design. Let's use that again. Let's try that, and well, let's try that on the duck-billed platypus and on the beaver or whatever, you know. We'll use that same design." So that is no argument. That is no argument in favor of an evolutionary creation. Proof number six, fulfilled prophecy. We've got a book here that has a lot of different prophecies in it. And God says in Isaiah 46, verse 10, Isaiah 46, verse 10. He said of himself, well, let's go to verse 9. And we'll break in through the middle of the verse on verse 9. For I am God, and there is no other. I'm the one and only. There is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. I make it happen, I say it, and then I make it happen. One example was the example of Cyrus the Great in Isaiah 44 and 45. God said there would be such a guy as that. And he said, Cyrus the Great's going to come. And everybody's saying, who? Who's that? Cyrus who? Well, that's a weird name. Cyrus? That's not an Israelite name. That's a Babylonian name. Babylon. What's the deal about Babylon? Who cares? Does Cyrus the Great's going to come along and he's going to free us? Free us from what? And that was given by Isaiah more than 100 years, more like 150 years before he was even born. Now, those that want to discredit the Bible said, it's all smoke and mirrors. It didn't happen. They wrote it, somebody wrote it in later. But there's a lot of indication that it is absolutely legitimate that end time prophecies in 2 Timothy 3. And by the way, Cyrus the Great came on the scene just as God prophesied that he would. And guess what his mama named it? Cyrus, that weird name. Second Timothy, chapter 3, verse 1. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. For men, lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Such people turn away. I wonder when that is. Where can you look around and see such things as that taking place? 2 Peter 3. Similar. It talks about this again, describing what we could see as our culture. Our culture. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, verse 10, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be, and this from the God who says, I say it, and then I see it through. And God has done that and is doing that. And there are any of a number of reasons that we can look at that and see the world that we live in. Proof number seven. Proof number seven, how could you know that God exists? Because of answered prayer and personal relationships with that existing God. This is the kind of thing that no laboratory can measure, but we can observe in our lives, in our functioning, that it is real. I want to give you some examples out of my life. People talk about coincidence. Something amazing happens. Wow, what a coincidence that it happened. I have come in my life to believe not in coincidence, but the actions of the God who ultimately called me and chose me, not because I am just super. I'm not as great as this football. I mean, and And he'll sit back there and shake his head in denial, but I think he's a great guy. And I think he's strong spiritually, and I appreciate that. And I can say that about so many others of you as well. At age three, here's the evidence. I stuck my thumb in a hay baler. I was age three. Let me advise none of you to do that. Don't stick your thumb in a hay baler because that hay baler cut it off. And yet I didn't bleed to death. And I survived. Coincidence? No, maybe. Maybe that's a coincidence. It just so happens that things pattered along just at the right speed and the right actions taken that I didn't that I didn't bleed to death. Age 20, I had a major car accident. Now, in that car accident, when the accident was over, my car was upside down, suspended between the two banks of a culvert, and my head was halfway through the windshield. Sort of like this. My head was in the windshield. My forward motion stopped at the point when my right eyeball was about 1 millimeter from the jagged glass. You look pretty close right here, there's a scar here. There's a scar on the bridge of my nose. There was, at one time, a big scar right there. And my lip was split open. In the ER doc started stitching that lip back closed. And he explained to me, I've got to do this without anesthetic. It's not something you want to ever happen, and something I never want to experience again. To have a lacerated lower lip stitched together without anesthetic. There was some reason he couldn't do that. I was questioning that reason all along the way. I survived. The coincidence. Maybe. Age 20. Well, that was the first accident. Now I'm age 29, talking about the second accident. You know how you're tooling along a roadway? And this is Eastern Kentucky, so the roads don't go flat and straight. They're up and down. I'm going up a hill. I come to the crest of the hill, and there's another car on my side, a much bigger car than I had, and bang! No time to slow down. Full highway speed for both cars. And so, had a broken left foot, broken ribs. And being protected by God can be variable, I'll tell you. You can be protected by God and still come out hurting pretty bad. But had broken ribs, broken foot, had a concussion, and I survived. Is that a coincidence? Ooh. Yeah, you're beginning to shake your head then. The first of two motorcycle crashes. Slid out, going around a mountain curve in eastern Kentucky. There was gravel on the pavement. The rear tire just slid out from under me, and my head bounced down that highway like a basketball down the basketball court. Bang, 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 bang. I had heard, I had read, 90% of all motorcycle fatalities occur due to head injury. So I wore a helmet. And of course, I wasn't thinking about that statement at the time. All I was thinking about was the massive road rash that I had all over my body and those bangs on my head. And that when I got up, got the bike up, I was able to use the puny little rear brake on the motorcycle. I got it home and I had to walk into the house and not tell my mother I had wrecked on the motorcycle. She didn't want me to have that thing anyway. And to tell my dad, come out here and help me put this thing away today. Second motorcycle accident. Going home from going to lunch at home or going to work. And car coming toward me through an intersection does a cut across in front of me. I laid the bike down on my left leg, by the way. And I flipped over, and once again, I'm bouncing down the pavement, but this time on my face. And of course, I'm leaving teeth on the pavement at this point in time, which subsequently had to be put back in very painfully by a dentist. When everything came to a stop, I roll over, and there's the bumper of the car directly over my head, and the passenger side front wheel right at my shoulder. One second more, I survived. Is that a coincidence? Coincidence. We're not done. We're not done, because I have also been hit as a pedestrian by a car. I'm the only person I know that that's happened to. I know it happens to people. I was crossing. I see another hand in the back. Oh, yeah. The Whitlarks have shared my experience. So, do you know what it feels like to get hit by a car? It's a lot worse than a bat hitting this baseball. It's a 2,500, 3,000 pound car hitting a 170 pound piece of meat. And I have to tell you, I was sore for a long, long time after that. I've been beaten up. That wasn't even the worst of it. When I was hit, I was propelled into a roadway of a busy street. It so happens there weren't any cars coming at that moment. At that moment. But it was a busy street. I don't know if a light caught them. And there were no cars there right then. And I survived. Is that a coincidence? Isn't that a coincidence? Isn't that a coincidence? Then I had a massive heart attack. I was probably about 40 years old. I was 40 years old at the time. A massive heart attack, but I'd had some problems the night before, so I was already in the hospital. They just kept me there for observation. They didn't think anything was wrong, but I had the meanest doctor in town as my physician, and nobody crossed it. So when the nurse told the ER doc, that's Dr. Sheets' patient, the doc said, "Ooh, let's keep him overnight just because." Next morning, Dr. Sheets came in. He's standing over me, looking at the monitor, looking at the circumstance, and he said, "Kirby, I think you're having a heart attack." And we have this new wonder drug, these clot-busting drugs, and we can give you that. And so they did. And I had no damage to my heart. Coincidence? And then to round out the story, I'll go quick here. Since that time, I had three strokes. One of them I never knew I had. They found it when I had the second one. They found the scarring in my brain. That explains a lot, I tell you. And they said, "You had a stroke before." And I said, "I don't know." They said, "Yep, you have." Now this is number two. And then came number three at some point after that. None since then. Thank you. None since then. And so we have coincidence. Coincidence, coincidence, survive, survive, survive. Now, maybe some of those things could have been coincidence, but that's 10 issues over the course of my life. 10 major experiences that were all life-threatening. At some point in time, you begin to question coincidence, and it begins to spell intervention. Not all of those times, when I was three, I didn't bother to believe whether God was real or not. But if it had not been real, who knows? But at some point in time, you begin to say, there's something more going on here. And you begin to look at your life differently when that comes about. Well, brethren, there is evidence out there. There is evidence in your life if you will look for it. And there is evidence that will tell you that God does exist and that He exists and works powerfully in our lives. And there are those who, no matter what, are not going to believe that God exists because they don't want to commit to a service to that God. So which do you want? Young people, you young people in the back, Solomon wrote about being young and about committing your life in Ecclesiastes in particular, to commit your life to God and His way and the benefits that would come out of that. Now, not all of those benefits are going to be pleasant. Not all of the things that you have to face in service of God will be pleasant. Some of the things will be very, very uncomfortable. And yet, which would you want to choose?
No, I just don't want to know about that.
Or are you going to say, here I am. Here I am, consider me, Lord. When Moses asked God his name in Exodus 3rd chapter, verse 14, God said his name was I Am. First person singular, I, and with the verb, first person singular of to be. And the basic translation is, I exist. I am here. And so, by faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word. By the word? What do you mean? By the voice, the spoken word, or by the word who is the word? Both was framed by the word of God so that the things, and this is Hebrews the 11th chapter. We will go there. And I think this is my last. Hebrews 11:3. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, and I think you could put that as a capital word as well, the word of God, Jesus Christ, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. Physical? Get your microscopes out. Get your gamma spectrometers out. Look and prove that there's God. It says they're not visible, they're spiritual. We're not made of things which are visible. In other words, they were made by that unseen power. Science can tell you a lot about how things work, but only God can tell you why you're here. And you are here to serve that one true and existing God. God doesn't force himself on anyone. He leaves just enough of a mystery so that finding him requires seeking. You can deny all day long. Verse 6, but without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So all you teenagers, you will face moments in life where you wonder if God's real. And what I do when those moments happen to me, I go back through my list of 10 items 10 times in my life that could have been a coincidence, but could all of them have been a coincidence? I go back through my understanding. The universe didn't always exist. It came to be and it had to have a beginner. I go back through the understanding of the things that I can observe about God and know. The universe is real. The universe tells us that God is real. The Bible says that he's real. You know, you want to know whether God is real or not? The Bible tells you. Guess what? Richard Dawkins' book about his make-believe watch doesn't tell him anything. He made that up. But just don't take my word for it. Start your own search. All of you teenagers, Malachi 3, verse 10, where God says, test me. Test me. You know, listen to what I have to say and do that and see what happens. See what kind of life is forged out for you. In Jeremiah 29, verse 12, I said it was the last. I didn't see that one. But this one is the last. I'm pretty sure. Jeremiah 29 and verse 12. Then you will call upon me. You're testing God, remember? Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you. And you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. With all your heart. Dedicate your life in the right direction, and God will show himself to you.